Bismillah wa hamdulillah wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. I go by the name of Amir Junaid Muhaddif, formerly known as Loon from Bad Boy Records. A lot of you brothers might know me, a lot of you brothers might not. So I'm going to start by telling my journey to Islam, which came way before the music business. I was born and raised in the streets of New York in Harlem, a place that was infested by drugs, violence, and crime. I spent maybe three-fourths of my life inspired, motivated, and indulged in the lifestyle that surrounded my environment in regards to drugs, violence, and things of the likes. And growing up in this environment, I was always inspired and influenced by the people who were influential in this environment, meaning the local drug dealers, the people who were involved in all the negativity. I never grew up inspired by music. I never grew up inspired by sports. These wasn't things that, you know, were on my radar when I was growing up in the streets of New York. But one thing, and I know a lot of you brothers in here can relate to, is living in these type of environments is the way we conduct ourselves as a means of surviving, is walking around with our poker face. You know, a lot of brothers walk around with our faces crunched up like we mad all the time, but in reality, we only trying to mask the true happiness that we might have in our heart. And sometimes we do have it. You know, every day is not a gloomy day. But as they say in the hood, every day is a rainy day, even when the sun is out. So I used to conduct myself in the same manner, poker face, never wanting anybody to see my hand. Whether I had royal flush or just bluffing with a pair of deuces, I just never wanted anybody to see my hand. But the reality of it is, when we consume this type of energy and this type of emotion, it only makes us bitter. It only convinces us, and we convince ourselves that we are truly mad, we truly are angry, we truly do have something to hide. And this is when I came to grips with my ability to write. Now, I wasn't the best student, you know. Failed math. I knew how to count money, but I failed math. But I was good at writing. So I utilized my ability to write in order to suffice some of the things that I was dealing with in the harsh reality of the streets of New York City. So I would write down these things. And by writing them down in some kind of subconscious way, I was able to deal with them and able to go back out into this environment and conduct myself like everything was cool. Then as time persists, the matters in my environment and my community started to get worse. And what I started to do now is include or incorporate my imagination alongside with the truth that I was facing as another means to get past or get by some of these things I was dealing with in my community. And then the third stage eventually came to where I started to write songs. So one day, I found myself in a situation where I was driving a car that I borrowed. Basically, the car didn't belong to me. I found myself in a situation with the law, driving a car that didn't belong to me. But prior to driving the car, the brother that I was hanging with at the time, he tried to warn me. He was like, "Yo, man, don't get in that car, man. You don't need to get in the car, man. You know, we doing better things. We out here, you know, getting money. We doing all right for ourselves. You don't need to get in the car." But at the time, I was very stubborn, very hard-headed. So I told the brother, "You know what? I ain't going to go too far. I'm just going to drive down the corner. That's it. And I'll come right back. I'm just going to drive around the corner." Well, Yaki, I didn't even make it down to the corner. Police pulled me over and I was arrested for grand larceny. Now mind you, the same brother that told me not to get in the car was the same brother that came to the precinct to bail me out. And when he came, you know he already had that I told you so face. So I was about to just, you know, sit there and accept the beat down. It's my brother, he's my friend. He told me, I didn't listen. But instead of him nagging me about forewarning me about getting in this car. He started reciting some of the things that was in my book. And at that point, I didn't understand how this man knew some of the songs and the poems and things that I was writing. And at that moment, I realized I had left my book. And he had found my book. And instead of discouraging me, he encouraged me to pursue it. He said, yo, this is great stuff, man. I never even know you felt that way. I never even know you was dealing with stuff like that. And me being very shy at the time, you know, because this is my personal stuff. I didn't share this with nobody in the street, you know. I'm running around my poker face. I didn't want nobody to see that, you know, I possessed a smile, that I had some sense of joy in my heart. So I said, okay, cool, I understand what you're saying. Just give me my book. So when he gave me my book, I took his advice. And I definitely started to, you know, pursue more and more writing, more and more writing, more using my imagination to coincide with my reality and using it as a form to escape and using it as a therapeutic method to escape the harsh realities of New York City. And make a long story short, I made it successful in the music business. Now, a lot of y'all might be able to count maybe on one or two hands how many videos you seen me in, how many songs you might have heard of mine. But the reality was, I was more successful as a writer. I wrote 52 top 10 hits. I was much more successful as a writer because this was my initial ability. I wasn't pursuing, like I said, I never pursued to be a rap artist. I wasn't inspired by rap artists. Me, just like any other person coming out of this environment, my intention was to try to make things better in my immediate circle. And I think every brother in here shares that type of desire. Mom's working two jobs. You know, pop's working hard. Might be raised by your grandparents like me. And your initial intention is to try to make things better within your family structure. And I think that every artist and every entertainer that comes from these environments, they sincerely have this intention in their heart to utilize whatever talent they may have to try to suffice some of the issues that goes on in their immediate family circle. So this is what I did. This was my motivation. This is what landed me in the music business, and this is what made me successful. But the one thing that I wasn't prepared for is the lifestyle that comes with this success. And I don't think nobody prepares for this. Not even athletes that might play basketball, play football like a lot of y'all brothers play soccer. You might be kicking the ball around 3 a.m. when nobody else is around. Probably the last guy, everybody that went home, you still kicking a soccer ball around. But if you make it big, you never prepare yourself for the lifestyle that comes with success. And this is a situation that plagued me in my career. Because once I got successful, of course I was able to satisfy my initial intent was to help my family, help my grandmother take a load off a lot of people's backs, you know, support my sisters, help, you know what I'm saying, just all my friends that were there supporting me. I was going through the trials and tribulations and making it in the business. And I was successful at doing all these things. But what took place later is I started to get indulged in this 24-hour circle of consistent sin. And this is the lifestyle that a lot of you young brothers out here are inspired by. Y'all see these 3-minute and 40-second frames of Loon, P. Diddy, all these guys getting off of jets. From jets to the helicopter to the limousine and always sitting poolside with a whole bunch of, you know, beautiful women and things like this, $300,000 chains and all this, and this is the image that you're given from a business that's designed to show you only this aspect. So while you're looking at these 3 minute and 40-second frames, after a while, you start to get so attached to them, you actually think you know this person. You actually think you can put a finger on the lifestyle that he's living. But the reality of it is, it's just a facade. It's just a facade. Because everything that ever took place in those videos were only one-dimensional. And no human being, Muslim or non-Muslim, in this room, only has one dimension. You don't walk around smiling all day and never mad. You don't walk around mad all day and never smile. We all have multiple impressions of ourselves, right or wrong. So basically, people don't understand the oppression that comes with being successful. And as Muslims in here, y'all all know that Allah Azza wa Jal, He answers three du'as. The du'a of the traveler, the du'a of the parent, who makes du'a for the child, and the du'a of the oppressed. So once again, while looking at these images, you would never fathom in your mind that this brother could ever be oppressed. It's not likely, right? Not this guy. He's always getting off a jet. Every time I see him, he will Puff. Every time I see him, he will Usher. To the point you think me and Usher grew up. I be having people asking me questions, yo, where Usher at? I ain't seen Usher since the video, Aki. You understand? And this is how these impressions leave a lasting stain on people who are inspired by it. You tend to start making or putting this puzzle together in your head, you know? Puff, Usher, Genuine, they all crew, they all hang out. You know, 50 Cent, all of them, you know, you start, you know, imagining you know these people. So, basically, dealing with this oppression, realizing that I'm spending 24 hours a day sinning. I'm waking up first thing in the morning to sin. Spending the whole day, whole afternoon sinning. Whole evening sinning, late night sinning, just to wake up the next day and repeat the same cycle every day. And as Muslims, you fearful of this because you know there's no reward and there's no benefit for this type of practice. But at the time, me as a non-Muslim, I didn't know any better. But when the oppression started to sit in, I started to question myself every day, am I going to be able to do this for the rest of my life? What's going to happen when the 30s start rolling in? And the next up-and-coming guy is 19 years old out there with all this energy, man, just blowing me to shame. What am I going to do with myself? Am I going to continue to contribute to this cycle of sin? What am I going to do? And basically, that was that voice of oppression. So when this oppression started to sit in, I made a decision that I was going to leave Bad Boy Records. Because it wasn't just the success that came with me. I'm actually sharing space with a man who's a tycoon, who has a very intricate lifestyle as well. So even if I was able to fine-tune and fix a few things in my own life, I would still have to endure the lifestyle that comes with hanging with P. Diddy. So at that point, and we all have a breaking point, we human beings, that's when I realized enough is enough. I don't want to do this with him anymore. Maybe I can find some comfort zone of my own if I separate myself from this brother. And that's what I did. I left Bad Boy Records and I pursued a solo career of my own. Now, we all know that we all make plans, right? And as Muslims, we know that Allah plans better. So my little minute, little minuscule plan to separate myself from this brother and pursue my own solo career with intentions or with hopes to change maybe some of the things that was going on in my life turned into the beginning of my journey to Islam. Now, before I even start this journey, I want to explain to you the images that I had of the Muslim prior to this journey. Growing up in New York City, we all know this is a very multicultural place. Very diverse. All ethnicities, all cultures, all religions, all races, all reside in New York City. And I grew up in a neighborhood that wasn't dominated by the Muslim. But like I said, it was dominated by, you know, multifaceted cultures and religions. But religion never really played a part. It was more so that the Yemenese brothers that owned most of the local delis or the West African brothers that owned most of the, you know, taxi services and things of this nature, we all shared a common instinct of surviving in this environment. This was the brotherhood we shared living in this environment. So religion never really, you know, left a stain on me. Because wallahi, the Yemenis brothers that own the local delis and stuff, they would have like pictures of 4-year-olds stamped on the glass with AKs, and they would have their hat to the back. So I'm like, yo, what up, Sean? What's going on, Aki? And I'm like, oh, what up, Aki? You know, just interacting, community talk, you know, neighborhood talk. And then sometimes when they would close the deli down, they would come out on the corner and do the same thing that, you know, the brothers on the corner was doing. Smoking, drinking. So it's like, you know, religion never played a factor. You're looking at it like, these are my Yemenis brothers, you know, they in a struggle with us. You know, then you have the West African brothers, you know, they own most of the cab services. You know, they got this instinct to survive as well because, you know, they run into situations where they may be robbed or, you know, put at gunpoint in these taxis. So they're very edgy people. So I might find yourself in a taxi or something, say, yo, take me to 145th Street. Then while you're driving, you change gears. Like, you know what, take me to 135th. No, you know what, you get out of the cab now. I don't trust you. You get out. I'm like, hold on. I said, I just want to go to 145th. No. I don't need your money. Get out. I'm like, okay, calm down. Ain't you supposed to be a Muslim? You know? Just giving you a taste of Jahil. This is the way I perceive things in my community. Because I knew it was just a survival thing. Had nothing to do with where the brother was from. Had nothing to do with just I know that instinctively, even him as a Muslim as well, has to have this instinct of survival. So these were all the tainted images that I had of Islam. I never really quite understood. Then to make matters worse, you got these brothers with suits and bow ties. So my Islam nigga, my brother. Can I offer you a bean pot? Can I interest you in a final call? You looking at this dude like, what do you want from me, man? You a little too friendly, Aki. What's up with that? You know? So these were the images that I had. So now that my journey has begun, I have left Bad Boy and I started to travel the world. And my travels landed me in a lot of places. I actually got an opportunity to visit West Africa, visit Senegal, and seen Islam practiced there. I had an opportunity to go to Morocco, seeing Islam practice there. Been to Kazakhstan, Asia, plenty of places. And wallahi, I consistently ran into Islam. And not that I was paying any like real acute attention to all this, but just, you know, noticing certain things. Then one time I traveled to Canada and I did a song with a Lebanese artist by the name of Masadi. I don't know if any of you brothers out here know who Masadi is. Y'all might know who Masadi is. Lebanese guy, you know, handsome guy, nice little voice. Yeah, did a little song with Masadi. And at the time, it was kind of like a one-off. I didn't really think that, you know, it was going to be like a big record. Because, you know, when you achieve a certain level of success, you get a little cocky. Like, man, I don't do songs with Mariah and stuff. I don't really do songs with Lebanese cats and stuff like that. You know, a little arrogant. But I did it because the brother was sincere. He was cool. He had a nice little, you know, he had some talent. So I did this song, not even really thinking that it would do anything. But we'll lie, y'all, kid. The record was big in the Arab world. It was big in the Muslim world. And this is about maybe like, you know, a couple years ago. So I got invited to come to the UAE. So I was like, subhanAllah, I get to go to the UAE. And I heard stories about Dubai, I heard stories about, you know, Abu Dhabi, the 7-star hotel, all this extravagant stuff that was planted in a place that was dominated by Muslims. So not only am I excited about the success of this song and how I'm being introduced to a whole nother world, but I'm actually being invited to a place where Islam, where I'm supposed to get another impression of Islam, different from the impression that I had in my own community. And when I got there, to tell you the truth, at first I felt kind of dubbed. Because when I got there, got off the plane, straight to the car, to the hotel, from the hotel to a club. And guess who was in the club? Muslims. Drinking, smoking, sisters wearing skirts, no different from the American women. And at that point, I was like, man, what is going on? Like, why is it? This can't be like what Muslims do. Because it's starting to seem too compatible to what I'm faced every day in this business and in this environment. So after the show, we traveled to Abu Dhabi. When I got to Abu Dhabi, it was kind of a different scene. I seen a lot of Muslims wearing, you know, white thobes, white gutras, sisters wearing ibayas, niqabs, and hijabs, and all this stuff. And I seen a whole different image of the Muslim. brothers would take me to certain places and stuff, you know, other Muslim people that were family, relatives, they come in their house, say, Father, have a seat here, have shai, have dates, have this, have that. And as you're sitting there, and this man is just giving you stuff, and you're looking around and saying to yourself, this man gave me one more book or one more date, he's going to be broke. You know, I've never seen anybody who was willing to give so much. And he's not giving this so he can actually hang out with me later at the club. This is not no strategic method to give a brother like 100 dates to come through the VIP section and drink champagne with you later. So all these things collectively started to, like, you know, get into my heart and get into my mind. I'm like, wow, I never met people like this. And wallahi, in Jahiliyyah, you know, our impression of people wearing white and smiling is when you're dead. I think you have to die to see people dressed in white and smiling and this friendly. And I'm very much alive and this is happening. So I remember it was either the following morning where I was at the Emirates Palace. Supposed to be the only 7-star hotel in the world. Probably never make it back on a mid-Junaid salary, but, you know, alhamdulillah, as long as I was able to spend a couple nights at this extravagant hotel. And I remember it was like dawn and the sun was rising. So the sun was rising over the Arabian Sea and I'm overlooking this beautiful scene. And for the first time in a long time, I developed a newfound appreciation for Allah's creation. This was a beauty that I took for granted for so many years of my life. And once that feeling entered my heart, I was blown away. And there was nobody around to bear witness to what I was feeling. There was nobody around that I could consult at that time to try to understand what I was feeling. So the first thing I did was run down to the lobby of the hotel, and the first Muslim I found, I ran up on him and asked him, what do I have to do to be a Muslim? And the brother was blown away. Because, you know, normally you got to approach a non-Muslim and give him dawah. I'm running up on him, squeezing him. Like, what do I got to do to a Muslim? What do we mean to be a Muslim? And I repeated myself, what do I have to do to be a Muslim? He said, well, you want to be Muslim? I said, come on. Yeah, you know, I want to be a Muslim. He said, no, it's simple. You just say it. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. So I repeat these words. I keep my finger there. Like, okay, that's it. I ain't going to take a shower or something, you know. Put on all white like you. Go get dipped in the water. It got to be more than this. You can't just say that's it. He said, no, that's it. You're Muslim. And I just remember just cracking this smile like, I'm a Muslim. Like, and it was that simple. So it took me some time to ponder on what just took place. And I remember it was some kind of festival or something that kicked in. And I remember calling the one brother that I did know was a Muslim in Atlanta. He was from Philly, man. Brother, nice beard, you know, pants cut. And he never gave me no dawah, never told me about Islam. Because what he was into at the time was negative and we were doing negative business. So it was never no room for dawah. But me knowing that I have to go back to the United States and I have to start from somewhere. I have to start with the first Muslim I know. So I remember calling the brother. And I was like, yo, Aki, yo, it's crazy out here, man. They got this big festival, man. Everybody walking around with scarves with a picture of a king and a prince on their drink. He said, what? He said, though, ain't no holiday today. So what you mean? You Muslim, right? I'm Muslim. They got some stuff going on out here. Be the Muslims. He like, Aki, we get out of there. That ain't no holiday, man. What's going on? So I was like, all right, cool. You know, and that was my first introduction to something that wasn't in accordance to what was correct. I was like, wow, it was a big festival. It wasn't Eid. It wasn't something that we know. It's something that you celebrate. So I'm like, man, wow. These brothers is having a good old time. They ain't supposed to be. So basically, I returned back to the States. And I started to, you know, bury myself in studying Islam. Now, before I get to that, I want to be able to explain to y'all from where we started to where we're stopping right now, just to get everybody on the same page, to be mindful of what just took place. What just took place is I ended up inside the fold of Islam with no dawah. No one spoke to me about Islam. And we hear it all the time, that Allah's guidance is the best of guidance. Anyone Allah chooses to guide, no one can leave it astray. Anyone Allah guides astray, you know, no one can guide. So by me entering the fold of Islam, by all these examples, and having no da'wah, and for the first time in my life seeing Muslims practice their religion openly, was one of the biggest inspirations. And what I see today that's so, like, you know, repetitive in regards to how we conduct ourselves today as Muslims, I see a lot of cases where a lot of young brothers and sisters compromise their religion for the sake of fitting into society, for the sake of fear of what someone might think about you being a Muslim. And I want all of y'all to be mindful that these examples that I saw was the purpose and the reason why I was inspired by Islam. So while you're more worried about what someone's thinking about you, be mindful that you're actually inspiring people as well. So really, based on the way we conduct ourselves, is da'wah in itself. You understand my point? It's da'wah in itself. You don't have to open your mouth. Sometimes the way we conduct ourselves, the mannerisms and characteristics that we practice, prove to be more da'wah than you even opening your mouth and uttering one ayat or one hadith or one surah, anything. It turns out to be da'wah. So basically, you know, my journey to Islam, and I just give you brothers a short version because I want to really get more in depth with some issues that I see going on. Since I've been a Muslim, I've been a Muslim only a year. And like I said earlier, I see a lot of brothers inspired by these rappers and stuff. And I'm only here to tell you that everything that glitter isn't gold. Most of you young brothers out here that try to mimic and imitate these artists, you're going to find yourself committing more crime than they will. They only do songs talking about I killed 17 people, I blew up a building, you know, all this type of stuff. But you actually find yourself trying to implement these things. And you find yourself in a world of trouble that these people are spending their days trying to avoid. And it's becoming something that's very, very sickening at some point. And I'm going to give you an example. Even when I was in Jeddah, because I hear a lot of people say, I can't wait to go to a Muslim country. Yo, I can't wait till I go to Damascus. I want to go to Damascus. Yo, I'm going to study when I get to Damascus. I'm going to pray when I get to Damascus. I'm going to be a Muslim when I get to Damascus. Like people speak of Damascus or Medina like this is going to be an escape from the fitna. Wallahi, you're wrong. I remember giving a talk in Jeddah, and it was one brother who was like single-handedly misleading the Shabbat with his Tupac rendition. Brothers riding around Jeddah in a Hummer. Arab dude with an afro. I don't even know how he fluffed his joint up like that, but he was riding around Jeddah in a Hummer, smoking weed, playing Tupac. So I remember giving a talk to the youth in Jeddah, and I remember the Salat rolling in. And we was only like maybe 30, 40 minutes from Masjid Adam. It wasn't even that far. And I remember the Salat rolling in, and I told the young brothers, you know, yo, listen, you know, caravan, let's all go down to Masjid Adam, you know, make Salat. Young brothers like, nah, we can pray right here. So I looked at him like, huh? 30-minute drive, I just flew 15 hours out. Next to a man that was coughing, maybe 12 hours of the flight. Are you kidding me? I'm going to Masjid Adam to pray. So I remember one of the brothers that organized was telling me, like, nah, you got them that little group right there, they inspired by this dude. The brother I was telling you about in the Hummus, stuff, like, yeah, they inspired by this guy, man, you know, boy rap and all that stuff, the Jeddah and these kids is like kind of turned out off him. I said, oh, yeah, I want to meet this brother. I want to meet him. So I remember us going to this spot called Tiana. It's kind of like the Starbucks of tea. We went to this little tea spot. They invited the brother to come through. The first thing he said when he rolled up on me, he was like, yo, what up, Sean? I said, nah, salam alaikum, my king. He was like, nah, yo, west side. How you live in the Middle East, man? East side. He's like, nah, yo, Tupac for life. I said, yo, Akeem, Tupac is dead. So basically, my goal was not to allow him to feel the satisfaction of thinking that I was co-signing with this lifestyle or this little fitna he was bringing into Muslim land. I'm here making umrah. I'm overwhelmed, walking on clouds, Aki. And to even know that the fitna takes place there. And may Allah, you know what I'm saying, may Allah protect us all from these things. You understand? But it's like becoming more and more common. The more I travel and give these talks, I see a lot of this happening, and it really, you know, it really brings a pain to my heart. Because it's not a day that don't go by. Not one day that don't go by where I don't have this immense fear that what Allah guided me to, I could easily lose. You understand? This guidance to Islam, to this beautiful religion of Islam, I could lose this. And that is my greatest fear. I share two emotions that are equally strong. One is gratitude, extreme gratitude, knowing that I was on a path to just destruction, not knowing anything about Islam, not having no prior understanding about Islam. To be guided to Islam and be guided to the correct methodology of Islam, I have an immense feeling of gratitude. Then the second emotion that I have is this immense feeling of unworthiness. And I don't know if any of y'all feel that, but I feel unworthy at times. Because when I look at my immediate circle of people and I don't question the decree of Allah, subhanAllah, but I do look around my family, like my grandmother. She's a better person than me. Why Allah didn't choose her? I got a little brother that's a real cool dude, man. Why Allah didn't choose him? So it's not a day that go by I don't feel gratitude that's equally challenged by unworthiness. And when I see young Muslims like yourself, whether you're born Muslim or you reverted like myself, it just really hurts me to see that, you know, young brothers today, man, are so inspired by something that has no benefit at all, that is equivalent to what Allah has given us. He has given you the tests and the answers. And when you look at it from the outside like me, sometimes it looks like brothers and sisters are still looking for answers. How could you still be looking for answers when Allah Azza wa Jal has given you the test and the answers? And you don't even have to be sneaky about it. It ain't like you gotta hide it. Like the teachers coming and sneak them or something. You can pull the answers out right with the test. Study them both, understand them both, and apply it. Versus trying to study an artist, study an entertainer, study some athlete, and try to implement his lifestyle, which is only a temporary fix. So my question to a lot of you brothers today is, how many of us really truly love and fear Allah? How many of us truly love and fear Allah? How many of us willing to sacrifice the truth to follow something that's false? How much longer is this generation of young brothers and sisters going to continue to take yourself off course, aspiring to be something that is not as beneficial as receiving the mercy of Allah? And inshallah, entering Jannah. To me, that's like making it to the party that don't stop. I've been to a lot of parties in my life, trust me. They end in like 2 hours, you wake up the next day with hangovers, regret, laying next to somebody you wish you never even touched. And to know that I'm on a path to actually going to a party that don't stop, it's like, how much more motivation do we need? So basically, because we have a lot of brothers here, I'm going to sum this one up, and I would like to, you know, do the questions and answers and see if we can, you know, connect a little bit more based on what's on your hearts and what's in your mind. Because I'm just a brother that reverted to Islam 1 year. And I'm in dire need of Allah's mercy every day. I have a terrible fear of losing what has been given to me. And when I see brothers willing to just compromise themselves and compromise this beautiful religion of Islam and throw away this truth to separate it, to substitute it for something that is false, it's actually scary to me. It's scarier than anything I've ever seen in my neighborhood. And I've seen a lot of things, man. But I've never seen nothing more suicidal than that. I've never seen nothing more detrimental to your life and your health than that. So basically, I just hope y'all brothers understand, you know, we've been given something greater than anything you're searching for outside this box. And I've experimented with all those temporary fixes, trust me. I used to spend 5 hours in a spa, getting Norwegian neck rubs, Swedish back cracks, facials, little Chinese lady walking on my back for an hour. Get one phone call and I got knots in my back again. I would see somebody in the music business with a chain look better than mine. I'd go to the jeweler and put $350,000 worth of diamonds in my stuff. Get a chain to hang on the floor, I can kick it when I walk. Just to turn around a month later and see somebody with a better chain. I will fly to Caribbean islands and stuff and just try to endure all the beauty that comes with this so-called paradise. Swimming underwater, trying to stay and hold my breath as long as I can because you don't get nothing down there. You don't get bothered. Nobody do nothing to you. Just to land back in JFK and got to be confronted with my lifestyle and my life again. I tried all these things. I remember opening up a fortune cookie and it say you're going to meet a nice person today. And guess what? You meet a nice person that day. Now what? I'm in a Chinese restaurant every week. Man asked me, do I want something to drink? I'm like, nah, just send the fortune cookies. Horoscopes. Don't split the pole. Look out for the black cat. Yo, I can't do this show without my favorite hat. All this crazy stuff. And they never amounted to the things that Islam has brought into my life. Islam has brought simplicity in my life, something I couldn't purchase. And believe me, I tried. I ran through money that we all dream about having. I even have dreams I get it back. Kind of hard on a Muslim salary, you know. But there's a greater reward, and that's what I'm searching for. And I hope that you brothers is on the same journey. JazakAllah khair. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.